Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Chris Hutting. Let's get into our news story of today, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the leaked list of ANC MPs. Now, this was leaked, it appears to be by an IEC official who has since been fired. He also apparently leaked on social media the list of the MK party's candidates to parliament. But I think it's interesting and worth talking a little bit about the ANC list. So I don't think this is the full list of who they're going to be sending to parliament. It's missing some of the provincial, the people who will be selected based on how they do in the provinces. But there are still some interesting things we can learn from this list. The first is that it seems as though, in terms of the ANC's internal list-making process, a lot of its younger, more ideological people have done better on the parliamentary list. So what do I mean by that? That means that they're at a higher position. So when you get votes in the election, you then get a percentage of the seats that is the same as the percentage of votes you got in the election. And then that's how that tells you how many seats you get. So you go down your list and you say, okay, first seat goes to this person, second seat goes to this person. So you can get an idea of how well each party or how it prioritizes each of its MPs by looking at these lists. And it seems like a lot of the currently serving ministers have done actually quite badly. For example, Finance Minister Ido Konongwana is at 62 on the list, while his deputy Finance Minister David Masondo is at 49. Is at 11th. Naledi Pandor is all the way down at 86. Joe Pashla, who's the current health minister, is not on the list. Zweli Mkhize is also very high on the list, which means that he's very likely to go back to parliament will be put in a prime position then to be reappointed as a minister by President Cyril Ramaphosa. But the striking thing, I think, for this thing is because at the end of the day, the president is going to choose whoever he wants as his ministers, regardless of where they came on this list, right? As long as they get back into parliament. There are two striking things, though. One is, firstly, you know, we don't know what number on this list is going to get into parliament. You know, is Naledi Pandor going to make it into parliament? Well, we'll have to see. It's based off of how well the ANC does in this election. It does seem as though the ANC's Integrity Commission's recommendations have, for the most part, kind of been ignored. You still have people who are associated with, you know, state capture or various scandals, everyone from Zizi Kodwa, Gweramantashe, David Mahlobo, are all in danger, all very likely to make it back into parliament. And so one does wonder now what senior ANC figures or senior ANC people who have threatened to resign from the party if the State Capture Commission report is not taken seriously are going to do. So, Chris, what do you make of this? I think at the end of the day, it shows that the ANC is, despite some of the younger people doing better on this list, generally speaking, there's not that much improvement. There's not that much change in the ANC right now.
No, I agree. I didn't think one should have expected radical, maybe ideological change. You could have changes in terms of how one pursues that ideology or those policies as to the different people that might then compose the top seven, the so-called top seven of the ANC, what marching orders they give, as it were. Can they get the rest of the party to buy in or not? Should the party come in below 50% for the first time in a national election, what does that do to your sort of authority figures in your party for their legitimacy? Does it increase tensions between your leadership and those, you know, you are tasked with leading? If you look at figures like Malusi Gigaba, very high on that list and all the allegations against him. You mentioned the former Minister of Health, Zweli Mkhize. I think this puts, if there wasn't already a serious burden of proof for the president and the ANC to shift in terms of reforms after state capture, in terms of where the president has said the ANC stands as accused number one in terms of state capture and corruption allegations. If that burden of proof hadn't been shifted before, I definitely don't think it will be now. The Secretary General, Fikile Mbalula, at a press briefing earlier this week, or was it over the weekend, said to the effect of some individuals were asked to step aside and they have refused to do so because they believe the procedures and the processes should, you know, be unfolded and be respected. So there's always that fallback of, no, we're we want to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. That's why we're not, you know, just willy-nilly. We're not running a dictatorship here. Let's give people time. Let's let them prove their innocence. There's always that, I guess, tension and trying to present a sort of objective, neutral role. But at the end of the day, you're undermining all those promises and various commitments you made around cleaning house, around running things properly, around now having capable and ethical cadres, all that sort of thing. I think you chip away at with having so many of these people on the list, which is nothing to say of people even like President Ramaphosa, who is former President Zuma's number two while state capture was happening. So, you know, there might not be those bigger allegations like there are against Madusi Gigaba, but that doesn't mean it's all, you know, some people aren't untainted.
And definitely, just to be clear there, Madusi Gigaba is very high on the list. He was at position, oh no, I've just lost it now. it was in the top 20, I think it was. Okay, let us move on to our next story. And this is the ongoing water crisis in a couple of South Africa's cities. I am still without water myself, so I'm not particularly pleased by that. But, you know, we're currently, the EFF is holding a protest outside the Durban City Hall in eThekwini because of the water outages there, where some areas have been without water for, they say, months. And there are ongoing problems with the infrastructure there. There's an editorial in Business Day Today talking about how the water crisis, which has long been predicted for many of South Africa's metros, has now arrived. And the editorial describes the recent water outage in Randburg that is still ongoing in Johannesburg is a clear and present danger to life, health, and dignity. This is obviously a huge blow to the industries in the businesses, the life, pretty much every aspect of civilization, really, in South Africa's important cities of both Durban and Johannesburg. I see also in Tshwane there was a not as big but still an area without water today. So it does look like this is a very serious problem. We've already had the Hammanskraal water outage in north of Tshwane, which has lasted for a long time. And one begins to wonder, Chris, whether water shedding or water outages are going to become as much of a issue in our economic and political life as load shedding has been. What do you make of this, Chris?
Yeah, I think one reason to think that they might become as big an issue is the messaging sent out by those institutions, government departments charged with managing bulk water supply, where Joburg Water, for example, over the last week has said this is as a consequence of high usage. This is a result of low reservoirs. Now, I don't want to discount that you can have high usage and low reservoirs, but also, are you doing anything to address the billions of liters lost due to leaks, lack of maintenance, where a fault is reported, it's excavated, and sort of the site is left open, as numerous journalists in Johannesburg especially have documented over the last year, if not longer, where these things are not resolved, that contributes to the situation where you are now, where that infrastructure just cannot keep up. There might be fixes. Then you have massive amounts of air rushing through that again puts pressure on the pipes and leads to small breaks, but they sort of ramp up over time. So that's partly that issue around taking responsibility and where is the, not to lay blame, but who's taking ownership of the situation from the sort of municipality metro point of view. And then secondly, it's one thing to state-proof yourself in terms of electricity. If you can afford solar panels, that sort of thing, a UPS, some sort of backup. Water provision, bulk water provision is a whole different, I think, kettle of fish. And yeah, I'd say many people, of course, homes, but also businesses aren't necessarily prepared for that. eThekwini in Durban, they've had a bit more prep time than city of Johannesburg. So maybe those businesses in Joburg, I think, should rightly not assume that this is going to be isolated. I'm not saying it'll escalate and we're going to have wide-scale, massive outages and droughts, but the trend line of lower performance in blue drop reports, green drop reports, more leakages, that's the trend line over the last 5 years. So inevitably, this sort of thing is going to become a part of daily life, I think.
Yes. One of the things that struck me about the Johannesburg water crisis is in many cases, not just the infrastructure, which keeps failing at different times. We, you know, while we've had this big one from the Eichenhof pumping station, which has affected the south and west of Johannesburg, all the way up from Soweto into Randburg and Roodepoort, we've also had much smaller, but kind of occasional outages that have affected parts of Sandton, that have affected parts of the east of the city, completely unrelated. So these are different problems. I see that Johannesburg Water and Rand Water are blaming a lightning strike for the original major outage, which of course is always possible. But as has been admitted by City Power and Johannesburg Water themselves, there was no backup power system to the Eichenhof pumping station, which they are now trying to lay, but hadn't planned for. So they're having difficulty trying to get it around already existing infrastructure in that area. In the one of the areas that I live nearby, they're having to run additional pipelines from other reservoirs right now in order to feed into the still empty water reservoirs. These are kind of backup systems and forward planning that should have probably been done a very long time ago, but have just been kind of left until the crisis was already there, and then everyone has to scramble. And that, to me, is a very key sign of mismanagement. When every decision seems to be a moment-to-moment thing, and the city is constantly in a form of crisis mode rather than kind of trying to prevent things from happening before they happen. Okay, let us move on to our last story for today. And Chris, this is about something you wrote about South Africa's pie not being big enough. What do you mean?
So this particular article did a bit of a deep dive into the latest budget delivered a few weeks ago now by the Minister of Finance, the current Minister of Finance, Enoch Godongwana. We'll see if he still is after the elections, given also how low he was on the ANC's list, but also depending on election outcomes. Most analysts are going for the line that it could have been a lot worse budget. Things like NHI, basic income grant, in an election year, you would have expected those things to be pushed through, maybe for populist reasons. But I think if you look at some of the underlying numbers, like the debt to GDP ratio peaking around 75%, the deficit hovering between 5 and 6%, the massive continued increase in postponing the deadline for the social relief of distress grant almost every 6 months to every 12 months, so the focus on grant provision, not necessarily on economic growth. All of that points to, I think, lots of fiscal pressures coming to bear on not just the current government, but future incoming government. Should we have some sort of opposition coalition government? Should it be an ANC EFF government? Not that they'll necessarily worry too much about fiscal responsibility, but there are going to be those pressures on them in terms of where the money is spent, because there isn't that much money to go around anymore. You've got a shrinking tax base that is under more and more pressure. Disposable income is lower because of inflation that remains stubbornly high. All these things, I think, point to continued pressures on the government. Could that lead to cutbacks to certain services? I think you're seeing that in some ways, because you aren't getting increases above inflation in some areas. So it's a sort of sleight of hand. Speaking of sleights of hand, one way for the government that they tried to increase taxes was they did not adjust tax brackets and medical tax credits for inflation. So you can say, you can trumpet and say, we didn't increase taxes. Actually, you did, by not adjusting those brackets. So lots of different interests to try and balance here, to try and maintain some element of fiscal responsibility. All in all, it, you know, I think a relatively okay budget in its own, but in the context of the trends where it's been going over the last 3 to 5 years, I think very much concerning signs. A bit of a line held on the SOEs. So you've got 47 billion rand for Transnet as a sort of debt relief, equity, credit line kind of thing, not a direct cash injection, if you don't want to engage in semantics. Does that mean the line will be held in the future? Should Transnet come back? Should SAA come back for another billion, another cool 5 billion, that sort of thing? I think already that sort of game has been given up. So that's sort of what we tried to do, was just unpacking the budget. What are some of the implications? And all in all, and tying this to our story on water, in the context of lower revenues for government on national and provincial level, more pressure on municipalities to collect revenue, to provide services, can we look for things like rate increases coming down the line? I think that is a very high probability.
All right, that's all the time we have for today. Please go and check out pledgetovote.co.za to pledge to vote in the South African 2024 elections. It's important to make your voice heard, and that will help you to make sure that your voice is. Thank you very much, and that's a wrap.